Tilehurst End podcast
by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Hello and welcome along to a very special edition of the Tilehurst End podcast extra. I am Dan Wimbush. I am joined tonight by a real motley crew. Now, the Tilehurst End podcast is actually turned 10 years old in 2023, so we're in our 11th year now. Of course, Ben and Ross flying the flag proudly with their show weekly, and I'm still hobbling along. They've kind of let me in through the back door to do a few podcast extras, but I thought it was high time to hear some voices from the past on this show, and I'm delighted to say that I think we've got 15 years worth of Reading FC podcasting experience to call upon, plus some of the very best minds that have worked on the Tilehurst End written site as well. I am joined in no particular order, just because it's the order they appear on my screen, by Mark Mayo. Mark, hello, how are you?
Thank you. Yeah, we're going in reverse order, are we, in terms of chronology for now. The last year podcast host, but it's my first appearance back on the show as well, which is lovely. So thanks for having me back.
Yeah, how is the podcast retirement home treating you well? Is the buffet okay?
Yeah, we've got lawn bowls. We've got people occasionally coming to see us. Yeah, it's a nice, lovely pool. Don't go in it, but it's nice. And lots of lovely. The people who work here are very kind, so I don't have to worry anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. They treat us well when we play bingo as well. And going back in that reverse order as well, the man who started this all, the grandfather, the godfather of Reading FC podcasting from all the way back in the Reading Football Fancast in 2008. It is Westy, Alan West. Westy, mate, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I wish I was staying at the same old people's zone that Mark's at, because my orderlies are giving me a beating on a regular basis. But other than that, I'm fine, thank you.
it's different because you request it, Westy.
Well, listen, if you pay for cheap, those of you get cheap, don't you? We all know that. So, but it's nice to be back, and it's nice to see so many happy faces. So that's one good thing. And I think it's lovely to see Johnny as well, because he looks like he's got 10 years younger than from the last time I see him. So I don't know what he's eating and drinking, but it's not what I'm eating and drinking. I can tell you that for nothing.
Absolutely. Johnny Williams, the other man who was in for the first episode of the Tilehurst End podcast. Johnny, welcome back, mate.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I'm honoured that you think that of me, Westy. It's obviously the Benjamin Button effect on me, but maybe it's just the webcam making me look good. But yeah, delighted to be here. So yeah, definitely enough of that over the last few years. But yeah, absolutely delighted to be back, and yeah, delighted to see so many familiar faces.
And of course, Ollie Allen, the man who before myself also took over podcast X duties. Ollie, you well?
Yeah, very well. Yeah, I was kind of spending this afternoon kind of reminiscing about TTE. The last 10 years, I think I was 16 when I started writing for TTE and going on the podcast, which is crazy. Like, I think it was my GCSE results day when I started, or like the day, couple of days after that. And now I'm, mid-20s, so it's been a bit of a whirlwind, but yeah, all good.
Absolutely. Please, let's not dwell on how much older we all are, because that will make a very depressing show very quickly. And we had to get on the man who knows more about Reading Football Club than we've ever forgotten. It is Dave Handbags Harris. Dave, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, just looking forward to conjuring up some memories. I've already got memories in my head of rocking up to Istanbul, Mangal, before round to your house down at D Road to do the recordings. So, some good times.
Yeah, as much as I would absolutely love to have all six of us around a table these days, thankfully technology has moved on somewhat, so I don't have to spend hours, setting up cables and headphones and printing off scripts and things like that. So there are certain things I miss. I miss all of your company on this show, but I do not miss the technical side of things. So this lovely suite we've been given, again, thanks to our sponsors, Foot Coaching as well, who helped provide our studio here on Riverside. And of course, ZCZ Films, who have been backing this show for years now. Thank you to both of you. I'll give them both a little bit more of a plug at the end of the show. But look, we're here to talk about Reading Football Club as much as we're here to talk about old times. Got to start with basically how you're seeing the situation at the club and everything like that at the moment. Mark, I'm going to start with you. You ended your 10-year hosting the Tilehurst End podcast, with a lot of uncertainty after relegation. How have you sort of seen the last sort of 7-8 months?
Yeah, well, it started how I thought it was going to, which is just as well that I was prepared for it to be absolutely dreadful to begin with, both in the sense that League One is a lot worse than I thought it was going to be. I really did not expect such a drop-off in quality. And I guess that's reflected in not only the teams that are coming to the Mad Stad, and you're seeing teams with kind of 60% passing accuracy and all this sort of stuff, and lots of time just goes out of games with nothing happening, but also in I mean, ultimately, it is, I have to say, since I started in watching games in 02, 03, actually speaking, the worst Reading team I've ever seen, because of the amount of quality in this team is just so much lower than what we've become used to, especially going back to like the old days of 06 and 12 and everything. So, yeah, it's been a learning experience in so many different ways. Any fan of my age will have that who's not watched League One before. Maybe it was worse back in the day. I should imagine it probably was when we were there in the early noughties. But, yeah, it's been as bad as I thought it would be to begin with, certainly in terms of the results. I thought we were really going to struggle and it would shock us more than we thought it was. That's luckily turned into a bit of a U-turn effect now, and we're looking, certainly in the last 3 or 4 months, we're looking like the sort of team that we saw kind of around early McDermott period, kind of early Coppell period, a team that is knocking on the door of being able to contend for promotion in League One. Obviously, you look at the table and what's going on off the pitch. We are a million miles from that, unfortunately. But that team, 11 players on the pitch week in, week out, is one of the better teams in the league at the moment. And I guess while we've got everything that's going on, just trying to enjoy that for the 90 minutes and actually having some decent results has been quite enjoyable, more than I thought it was going to be.
Westy, how have you sort of handled everything? I want to talk, like, particularly like emotionally as a fan that has been, you know, supporter free probably as long as, longer than any of us. You know, have you been, has it got to you, some of the ups and downs that we've had this year? Or have you been able to sort of, with that extra experience, kind of, you know, take it a little, is it any easier or does it make it even more hard?
Do you know, I've had this conversation the other day with a few of my mates, and as you get older, you a bit more methodical about the way you think about things. So obviously I'm probably one of the few that have seen them play in the lower leagues anyway, especially when I was a kid. But when I look back at that time, I look at it with rose-tinted glasses. You know, I remember going to Elm Park on a Tuesday night in the cold and probably seeing a beat to Rochdale or something like that. But in my mind, I don't remember any of that. I just remember their good times and coming up through the leagues. And I think sort of the younger fans have been quite lucky that they've seen them sort of rise to the Premier League, and they haven't really had a period of 5 or 10 years when it's been particularly poor like we're having now. Even when they got relegated last year, again, we were rose-tinted glasses. I thought, do you know what? I think we'll go straight back up. I don't know where I got this from, but I thought we'd go straight back up. And then we see them struggle. And I think the credit to Sellers is that, I always say this, and I've said it for every year that I've done podcasts and even before I started doing it, is you always start the season with a completely different team than you finish with. Yeah. So I didn't look, I was going to research it today, but I was going to look at the first game of the season. But he moved on a lot of the old guard when a lot of us were worried that that might be a problem. I mean, Carroll was probably one of the first ones to go. And he's moved some of the old guard out and not even making a bench nowadays. And he's brought the youngsters through. And to be fair, the signings they made with Smith and Nibbs have been massive signings for getting them up that division. And even when they were losing, I think we could all see that they were not that far off of being further up the league than they were, because, as Mark said, it is a very, very poor division. And we should have known that by the teams that were promoted last year, the amount of points they got and how they found it so easy to get out of the division that actually wasn't going to be a lot here to beat. We've seen this year Portsmouth come down there, wasn't that impressed with them. And we've got some good results against top sides. It's just we started slowly. The turmoil can't help behind the scenes. Obviously, losing the points hasn't helped. But I still feel... And I still feel that it's been a good season in the fact that the away fans, there have been big crowds every single game. The crowd seem to be back on side. And I think that the wheels are turning in the right direction. Again, we've got the stuff going on in the background that really could need sorting out sooner rather than later. But like you added earlier, that if you've sort of been a Reading fan for a long time, you know that because of the size of the club, you're going to have these years where you have a drop off. But it will come back. It's just how quickly we get it back. And at the moment, with that nice young team, if they can keep them together for the next season and add a bit more quality to them, you can see them being in the playoffs at the very least next year. But again, it all depends on the stuff that's going on in the background, which we've seen before. It's not a new thing. With Smee when I was a kid and Madesi taking over, we've seen this before and it came good in the end. And I still think at some point, maybe in the next 5-10 years, we'll be back at the top end of the Championship and we'll forget all about this, which is what we all hope.
That's the critical point, isn't it? Is that you need the owner to be able to actually, you know, sort of lead from the top. But at the moment, we haven't got that.
No.
And that's the critical point.
Not a new thing, is it? We've seen it before. It's just the wheels will turn eventually. It's just hopefully they turn quicker than they are at the moment.
Yeah, I was going to say, Johnny, you're a legendary Tyler Stent podcast fence sitter. So where are you at the moment? Are you in the glass half full or the glass half empty when you look at this football club?
I think I've got to be in the glass half full, which might shock you that I'm not just sort of, you know, sitting on the fence, as you say. I think, you know, what we've seen, particularly over the last 6 months, and I think really over the last 3, 4, 5 years of where we've had this turmoil behind the scenes, but also in terms of manager turnover as well, that what you just need is that consistency. And what Ruben Selles was doing was trying to implement a completely different play style to what anything we've seen previously, especially compared to what we had last season with Paul Ince. And you've got a completely new turnover of players as well, most of whom are extremely young, under the age of 21. I think the first game I went to this season, for various reasons, was in October, and I think there were two players in the starting lineup who were in the starting lineup for the last game I went to the previous season, which just shows you the amount of churn that there's been in the squad. And you're now seeing, I can understand the fans' frustration at the start of the season when, you know, we've dropped into League One. You think naturally, because we've been at a higher level for the last 20 years, you think we're better than this. We should be performing better than this. I agreed with Mark, like some of the standard of football that we've seen from opposition has been really quite poor when you compare it to just one rung of the ladder higher. And so I can understand the frustration, but you've seen what Ruben Selles has brought in and that the players have bought into that. And I think, you know, there's been a real camaraderie around the fans as well. Like Westy, you mentioned the away crowds were selling out, you know, taking 1,500 people to Carlisle, all the other away stands that we're filling out, you know, week in, week out. And I think, you know, it's got to the stage now where the fans have been galvanized by all of this. I think over the last 3 or 4 years where there has been the uncertainty and I guess sort of like more of a slow decline, you know, there hasn't necessarily been that galvanizing moment. It's been just sort of, you know, a slow creep towards relegation, towards League One and potentially towards oblivion, whereas now things have become a lot more sudden. And that's really sort of galvanized the fan base. And obviously when the fan base has been galvanized and we've got all the, you know, the sell before we die and all the protest and the chants and the coming together, couple that with the performances on the pitch, which have really turned a corner. And in terms of the form and in terms of how we're presenting ourselves, we are, you know, one of the informed teams. I think you've got to be positive, certainly about the rest of the season. And, you know, what you hope is that we can continue that momentum into next season, potentially with the new owner, potentially with an improvement in terms of the playing staff. So I think you've got to be, you know, as I say, you hope that where we've been sort of maybe 3 or 4 months ago is the, you know, is the nadir, is the trough, and now we're on the way up again.
Yeah, Ollie, I mean, you mentioned at the top of the show, you've come through from Tyler Stent as a teenager, gone on to work as a journalist, and now in the world of PR as well. I mean, what have you made of everything that's been going on sort of around the club? Has it made it harder, almost kind of knowing how the sausage is made, to sort of react to the club rather than, you know, I speak to certain people that don't really follow the news that closely. And I think it's almost a bit easier for them because they don't have that extra worry of kind of being able to read between the lines.
Yes, yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? I think, you know, things are so complex at Reading at the moment, and it's kind of, it maybe is kind of a little bit better to be kind of oblivious, if you like. You know, certainly there's definitely stuff going on at the club, which probably none of us know about. There's probably a lot deeper issues, you know, that go on and kind of things behind the scenes that kind of only those who are there will kind of know about. You know, make a kind of a fascinating kind of fly on the wall documentary. And I think, you know, if any kind of Netflix producers are kind of watching, then it's kind of the perfect club to kind of look on the inside at. I can only imagine some of the conversations that go on between Mark Bowen and, you know, Dai Yong Pang and stuff like that. But yeah, I think I have a little bit, it's not really popular me saying this, but I have a little bit of sympathy for the EFL, because it's incredibly difficult when a football club simply just doesn't stick to the rules. You know, it's become increasingly clear from the EFL statements that they are just as kind of frustrated with Dai Yong as we all are. Obviously, the way they're going about it in terms of, you know, punishing the football club in terms of points deductions is perhaps not, you know, the way we would like to see it dealt with. But it is just this one man going completely rogue to kind of anything I think any of us have seen before. The it's clearly completely new to the EFL. You know, when previous clubs have kind of gone under, it's kind of cash flow issues or stuff like that. But this is simply one man not wanting to engage with either funding the club or selling the club. It's almost as if he's in some kind of middle ground, which no one's kind of ever seen before. So we're in kind of uncharted territory, and it's, but as you know, others have said, it is kind of hopeful. We're on the way up now.
Yeah, you get the feeling that Reading are kind of going to be the last. I actually really do hope Reading will be the last club to go through this, because you do get the feeling that the EFL and football in general will be looking at this Reading example and being like, oh God, we cannot let this happen again. There needs to be this mechanism in place for removing people that are basically sabotaging a football club, sabotaging a business that is in, you know, the public interest. In this case, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people affected, you know, and who care about Reading Football Club. I mean, Dave, you've been closer to this than any of us, as you know, mentioned being on the Sell Before We Die campaign. I saw you outside helping people clown up the other week.
Didn't come over and say hello though, did you?
No way. Can't be seen fraternizing with you, Dave, in public. You know our agreement.
Oh, yeah. All right. That's me told, isn't it?
In all seriousness, though, how has the campaign been from sort of being on the inside of it? What have you made of the way that fans have kind of responded with the campaign? And what is the latest as we sort of sit here? We're recording this on, on Tuesday, March the 5th.
It's been enlightening, to be honest with you. I mean, from the very start, when I first joined the group, I was a little bit of a latecomer, as it were. It was clear that in the summer there were misgivings amongst a certain number of the fan base, and there needed to be a joined up approach into how to actually begin sort of protesting and trying to get the manager out. We didn't have a manager at the time. The owner out. Because it was becoming, you know, abundantly clear with the whole Chris Wilder shenanigans, you know, will he, won't he? Turns out that that obviously not, being the fact that he's at Sheffield United now, you know, that the whole issue around him. We needed that joined up approach with all the sort of the fan groups, with the well known websites and podcasts, and I think the key thing was to get supporters' trust on side, and we had them on side from the very, very start. It was a slow burner. But ultimately, you know, with the whole sort of tennis balls thing from sort of Bolton onwards, and having Bolton on side as well that day, you know, was pretty much bang on, and it started to really grow from there. And the march, of course, on the day Portsmouth came to town was a great success. We didn't anticipate having anywhere near the number that we did. We thought, you know, maybe 500, 600 people. So to have about three times that number, you know, join in on the march and actually have the A33 effectively closed one way going out of town for a couple of hours was great. Dave Kitson obviously joined the march, and of course local councillors and MPs, Matt Rodder and James Sunderland, Bracknell and Reading East. It's been since sort of Christmas. It's been a bit full on, because things are starting to come to a head now, and with you know multiple sanctions being taken this season, it's showing that Dai Young just doesn't care, or he doesn't have the wherewithal and the resource to be able to actually run the club appropriately. You know, even on today's star update with Nigel Howe, we're not going to have the money to come to run to the end of the season. So, you know, what from the very start, I suppose you could say, what are fans to do? The only thing we can do is voice our protest in as vociferous open a way as we possibly can, because ultimately fans are powerless to actually do anything with regards to the decisions that are taken within the club. And I think that's fundamentally wrong on a personal level. I think there needs to be some kind of legislation in place with the independent regulator. Fans do, you know, should have a golden share, as it were, and they need to be able to sort of raise legitimate protests as and when their club starts being, you know, run not in their interests, because ultimately with football is nothing without fans. It's a cliche to say that, but it is. You know, ultimately what are you going to do? We saw within COVID what that was like. We're having absolutely nobody in a stadium. and sort of talk about, you know, beyond soulless. So, you know, as I say, football is you know, football needs fans, and fans need football. So, as it is at the moment, we've kind of taken a little bit of a back seat. Not so much a back seat, that's the wrong way to phrase it, but a very, very close watching brief with regards to what's going on with the proposed sale. And, you know, Star give their updates. They have a weekly meeting. Sarah Turner has a meeting with Nigel Howe every week. And with the sales process progressing as the way it is, we're cocked and primed, ready to go again. But there's tentative positivity, I suppose you could call it, that the club could be in different hands by the end of the season.
I mean, Johnny, there were times, certainly this season, where I've literally sat there, either at work, home, or even in the stadium itself, thinking, I'm not sure this football club's going to exist. I was having a conversation with my dad on the concourse, being like, if anything does go bust, like, where do we play next season? Do we play at, like, Slough? We play at Maidenhead and stuff like that? Has ever kind of got to that stage for you?
I think it's tough because, you know, in a way, you, yeah, until you are threatened with that, you know, with that actual moment of, okay, wow, this might actually not be here, then you don't really think about it. It's almost like sort of out of sight, out of mind. And as I said, maybe it's just the way I felt over the last 3 or 4 years, where it's just sort of been that slow decline. And it's only really, you know, within the last year or so that it has become, I'd say, you know, a real incredible threat, or like, you know, you do have that moment where it's like, yeah, you know, this could be the end. And you hear about the, you know, the wages not being paid, and obviously all the points deductions, and, you know, potentially, you know, people reading into the history of Dae Young's ownership or other clubs, and, you know, you do see that threat. And so, yeah, you know, that I think that's when, obviously, you know, the protests went national, and it was good to see that coverage, you know, of those protests. And it was almost like that needed to happen in order for it to be, you know, to go into the national zeitgeist, or even the international zeitgeist, to have people like Gary Lineker and Ian Wright talking about it, when previously, you know, we were just, I guess, you know, just people on Twitter sort of seeing it. I think that was a really kind of important step, and made people stand up and realize that, you know, obviously this has happened to other clubs previously as well. You know, we only have to see with, you know, with MK Dons and Wimbledon, the delight that Wimbledon had like last week at winning that match, that, you know, there is a real threat of these, of this happening with clubs, where you do have to build and start again. But, you know, as Dave said, you've got to go with kind of cautious optimism, and I think hope that ultimately the people who run the club are, you know, are finding the best solution for it.
And Mark, how hard was it for you? Because I said you were hosting the Talisman podcast through COVID, through the first 2 seasons worth of points deductions. Did it leave you kind of like a bit burnt out? Have you been able to sort of step back into a more casual fan role, or are you still sort of living and breathing every moment of it?
Yeah, definitely burnt out as I was leaving, because the whole, I was going to leave in spite of relegation, or whether we were going to stay up anyway. Obviously, I'd have preferred to have not left on a relegation, but for me, I guess it was a bit of a chapter end sort of moment, both on and off the pitch, as it were. But yeah, it just got to, I think when it got to the multiple points deductions, like it happened once the first time, and Paul Ince rallied us, and we all kind of gave our all, and we had the like Sheffield United away, and we had that 4-4 with Swansea and all that sort of stuff. And it was all right, you know, we kind of got on with it, didn't we? And then it happened the second time, and it just felt like the club and the players didn't have it in them to do it again. And ultimately they didn't. And now we've got it a third time. And it just, I think the thing is now is it's a little bit of a, it's kind of that prison thing. I can't imagine life outside of it now. I can't imagine having a season where you kind of sit back and everything's nice and chilled and relaxed. I think that's almost it won't be until we get to that I'll kind of realise how weird this is now, because this is life now. This is the constant fear, the constant, you know, points deductions and everything being dropped out. And yeah, from a personal level, I think that the first few months of the season, with it being tough, like we discussed, and with everything just not quite working, it was really, I think just being a fan was really difficult. And that's why moments like I mean, this season, certainly that win we had at Millwall to start off when we won 4-0 in the League Cup. Those are the moments when actually, no matter what's going on with your club, no matter how, whether you're having a bit of disinterest at the moment or you're burned out, you kind of think, oh yeah, that's why I do it. That's why I'm still in this game. And luckily, we've started to have a few more of those recently. But it's in terms of the points deductions, if we don't have them next year, then either it's going to be amazing or we're going to be in like League Two or something, or there's just not, we'll be Reading AFC, I guess. That's the only way it can happen, isn't it?
Absolutely. Wes, that kind of leads me into what I was going to ask you as well. Like, how's the fan experience for you now? You've kind of been out of the podcasting game for a good few years now. You're back to just being, back bencher, as it were. Like, are you still able just to go and enjoy footy? I remember you talking in the past about how certain mates had drifted away for going to games and stuff. Are you still enjoying it, or are you kind of going out of habit? I mean, what's Reading Football Club to you now?
Reading Football Club will always be my escape from everyday life. So I will go until I can go no longer. I love it, and I've always loved it. And it doesn't bother me what division they're in. I just want to go enjoy 90 minutes of a game. And to be fair to the lads that we've got in playing for us now, apart from the start that wasn't so great, they've brought that enjoyment back to a certain extent. Now, yeah, we know they lack quality. The league lacks quality, like Mark Mayo said. But they're fighting. And like I said, the fans have been galvanised by the stuff that's been going on in the background. In many ways, and again, it might sound a bit controversial, it's probably helped to a certain extent that there has been that going on in the background, so the fans can all come back together. Like I say, you've seen the crowds go up. They're slowly increasing at home. They've been brilliant away. And it feels to me like the players are sort of back on our side of the fence rather than on the pitch letting us down, do you know? There's no big-time Charlies. There's no one there that you think should be doing better. You've just got a group of young lads that are trying to strive a career for himself. And if you can't get behind that, then I don't understand why you go to football in the first place, because you can see they're giving it all they've got, and the fans are getting behind them and supporting them even when things ain't going so well. You've been in crowds at Reading where they've been a half-decent side. They've got beat at home, they've been booed off the pitch, and they've put in a half-decent performance. That's not happening no more, and I think everyone's got behind them. We know that they're probably not the best in the world. But like I've always said, if you put a fan on the pitch and they give you 100%, then you can only back them. If they do the odd missed pass and the odd misplaced cross, then you kind of accept that. I think for me as a fan, I still enjoy it, as I always have done. And like I say, it comes in peaks and troughs. We talk about Wimbledon AFC there, how they drop down. I mean, I think the ones to look at really from the team that had nothing and have gone back to the Premier League is Luton. I mean, their rise back to the top has been as a miracle, really, from the position they were in. So like I say, it can be done. And like I say, I never lost enthusiasm of it, even when they're bottom of League One. I still go out every week thinking, do you know what, we'll win today. Where I get it from, I don't know. But I do get it.
And Ollie, what about you? I mean, what brings you the most joy when you watch Reading these days?
I think Westy hit the nail on the head, really. It's that escapism, isn't it? I'm kind of lucky enough to work in football, so I go to a lot of football games, but whenever I go to games, it's generally because I'm working, around the game. So it's just nice to come back to Reading and just to watch 90 minutes of football where kind of nothing else matters. It's kind of having that enjoyment of this is your team, it does feel like home coming back to the Masthead, whenever you go. And kind of as Westy said, this is a team now that kind of feels like it gets Reading completely. There's still that kind of academy core that we can be proud of, the likes of, Kelvin Iheobashiman and Gerald Dorset and stuff. But there's also players that have come in and who have kind of completely bought into the Reading culture. Someone like Amadou Mbengue, who couldn't even speak, kind of a word of English kind of 18 months ago when he first joined Reading. And he's kind of completely kind of bought into the culture. He's become a real fan favourite with his celebrations after goals and after games, and just kind of really seems to get the club. Similarly, someone like Harvey Nibbs, who, had no association to Reading before this summer, but has come in, and obviously his performances on the pitch have helped with him scoring goals and stuff like that. But his kind of whole personality, some of his stuff on social media is very good. He quote tweeted, Paul Simpson's quote of the weekend,
yeah,
where he said, you know, something along the lines of that it's Reading's fault and they should be punished by that. And Harvey Nibbs quite tweeted it with the "I took that personally" gif, which is brilliant. You know, I think it's players like that that have kind of come in the summer or last year, whatever, you know, probably had other kind of attractive clubs to go to. You know, I do not know why any player has signed for Reading over the last 12, 18 months, because it's probably the least attractive club in the football league. But there's players that have come here and have just got it, and it does feel special because, yeah, over the last couple of years there have been players who have felt like they've been coasting, who felt like they've simply been at the club just for a pay packet. Whereas I don't think you get any of that with kind of this current squad. They're all one with the fans, and they all want just as we do for Reading to get out of this situation. And that hopefully, you know, this time next year we can you know, be all pulling together in terms of a promotion push. So, yeah, it does sound strange considering we're near the bottom of League One, but it probably is one of the more enjoyable seasons most people have had following Reading, you know, in the last few years.
Yeah, it's one of those seasons where you'll remember kind of where you were through a lot of it, whereas I think a lot of the previous 5-6 seasons, probably going back to as soon as I couldn't tell you what season certain games happened in, and even the order of some of our managers, I forget if, like, did Clement come before Gomez, who, yeah, it just always kind of blends into one big sort of, as Mark was saying, kind of just this slow, slumbering sleepwalk into relegation and down to League One. But Dave, as our resident historian, like, where do you kind of put this squad? If you took away the off-field stuff, and I know it's really hard to do, but, you know, you were watching the football club as we rose up through from Division 2, old Division 2, well, not the oldest Division 2, but the middle old Division 2, under Mark McGee, through Jim Mick and all that kind of era as well. Where do you kind of put this squad at the moment in terms of its potential and sort of how exciting it is to kind of watch these guys on a weekly basis?
Do you know, it's very difficult to, given the, you know, where we are at the moment and the positivity surrounding the results and the performances and whatnot. You know, we're going to have the occasional bad result like we had against Barnsley and Portsmouth and whatnot. But at the moment, it's really difficult to sit back and say that there isn't something there at the moment that we haven't had before. You know, there is something to build on within this core of players that we've got. And it's very pleasing to actually see that not only have we got, you know, a core of players that could actually, you know, at the very least grind out results at the level that they're playing at, but also, you know, with a little bit of extra quality here and there, eventually look to be sort of one of the better and a stronger teams in the division, if they're not already, to be brutally honest with you. Of course, you know, you did mention the backroom issues, which it's very difficult to ignore, because, you know, it's going to take, you know, 2 to 3 years as a minimum for this, you know, for this club to get itself back on its feet. Let's not forget that, you know, we are under a transfer embargo for the next 18 months. You know, it's going to be very difficult to get the quality of player that we really, you know, need to actually bring the squad and bring the team up to the standard that really needs to be, you know, to be competing with the likes of this season's Portsmouth and Derby and the likes. But, you know, there's a massive, massive likability about this group of players. There are some real, real characters, and yes, they might lack in certain areas in terms of quality, but, you know, with Sam Smith and his you know, almost persistent need to antagonise opposition fans, and Harvey Nibbs with his, you know, as we mentioned before, his, you know, the fact that he had absolutely no connection to the club whatsoever, and now he's an absolute fan's favourite. And Amadou Mbengue, you know, his end of game celebrations after a win are absolutely brilliant, and, you know, Tyler Bindon, where there's just really, really, you know, he's almost a very, you know, almost the politest central defender going in the whole of English football, you know, and yet suddenly out of, you know, strangely out of nowhere, he'll just go in with an absolute crunching tackle, you know. There's a likability about this, you know, characters in that squad that there hasn't been for a long, long time, for over 10 years. And we're going back to probably under the first term under McDermott, when it was just as likeable, the players were just as likeable.
I think, sorry, Dave, I think just jumping in, like, and it was what you and Ollie have said, it really goes back to me for what we used to want in a Reading player, which was young and hungry. And that's almost been, because that's all we've got to sign in terms of all these youngsters and bringing through players from the academy and Tyler Binton, who's come in from abroad. But, you know, bringing in that core of players who, like we said, will give 100% right to the final whistle, even when, you know, they're absolutely out on their feet at the end of 90 minutes because they're having to play Tuesday, Saturday. Because, quite frankly, we don't have, you know, the amount of depth on the bench sometimes, where, you know, these players are having to put in a full shift, you know, twice a week for a full 90 minutes. And so, yeah, all you want as fans is to see that passion replicated on the pitch, as Westy said. And I think just bringing back that core of, you know, players who are fighting and want to give their all and want to develop, you know, under Sellers' guidance, I think is, yeah, as much as anything, has been a really galvanising factor within the squad.
A new Reading way, almost, is what we've been crying out for, isn't it? You know, John Keane talked about it in his book, Some of the Parts, and he always talked about it. And I think he was one of the first to kind of raise the alarm bells when the club was first getting sold to Zingarevich and stuff like that, that Reading had that identity under Medeski, that you said, Johnny, young, hungry players, bringing up players from lower leagues, obscure players from abroad, even going back to the likes of Xhaka, his lot, you know, they signed him from basically playing college football, and stuff like that, to developing and bringing these players through. And that kind of got lost in the big money, the Pogrebniaks, the Royston Drenters, Ola Johns, all talk of influences by super agents, this, that, and the other. And you never really, like...
And not just that, it was, you know, you also had managers that didn't buy into it, like Steve Clark, yeah, absolutely ripped the soul out of the club. And then 3 months later, wanted to piss off down the bloody road to Fulham. It's just so, so annoying.
I'm glad you know, handbags. You don't seem like too upset about that still.
No, not at all.
If anything, Wim, it's kind of the old Reading way, isn't it? It's like, if you look at the teams that've been successful for Reading, we've spent nothing on them. The Coppell team was out of nothing. The McGee team out of nothing. And though this has been enforced, it's kind of the way we've done it and been successful. Because when we spent money, as we all know, we spent it on rubbish or people that didn't want to be it. So, if anything, it might have enforced the change back to the old way that could become successful for us.
Yeah, when I look at our list of record transfer fees, you just shudder. You almost cannot comprehend. You know, when we were doing the podcast and you know, Reading was spending all $1 million, $2 million on someone, you thought, oh, that's big money. And it amazes me, Mark, how nonchalantly Reading were just suddenly dropping £7-8 million on players in the Championship. Like Sonny Aluko and George Puskas. And
George Puskas still played for us a year ago, or was still owned by us less than a year ago. It's mad.
But do you know what I mean? It's just like, how did Reading suddenly get to a point where they're dropping that much money on, let's face it, absolute dross?
Well, every time we spend money, it doesn't go well, basically, is it? Emerse Faye came back into our lives earlier this year as the victorious AFCON coach, having taken over halfway through the tournament, which, as bizarre as it could possibly be, but probably suits him, Emerse Faye, given how his career with Reading and everything turned out. So, yeah, it is just that thing. I think as well is that what's not really been said is that there's not... that it's the planning aspect to it, is that if you're going to go and spend... And I remember saying this on the podcast at the time. If you're going to go and spend £8 million on George Puskas, then you are going to build your team around him, because you're not going to sign 11 £8 million players. He must be your best player. You do everything you can to make him as good as he could be. And you probably could have built a team around George Puskas. It wouldn't have been a great team, but you could have done it. But actually, 3 days after we signed George Puskas for £8 million, we signed Lucas Xiao for £5 million. And those two strikers are probably two of the least compatible strikers to play each other, that alongside each other, that any team in the Championship has ever had. So it's about the planning. It's about the sense of, even if we're going to spend this money, which, I mean, let's face it, we're not going to see again for a long time at Reading, but you can make it work alongside a kind of young, hungry core if you have a bit of intelligence about it. But with us, it was as you say, like the Drenters, the Wayne Bridges, these kind of marquee named signings that didn't really need to be at Reading. And now you've got players who do need to be at Reading because, let's face it, you know, Tyler Bindon wasn't playing professional football really in the summer. If Amadou Mbengue hadn't made it work at Reading or wasn't making it work at Reading, he would be in a lower tier French team, probably earning less money or maybe even, you know, something more obscure than that. And it's that kind of level that players who have come to Reading, they probably knew they were in for a fight. That, you know, just generally making your career work as a footballer is a massive fight. And I think in reality, if you're an agent looking at Reading, do you want your player to sign for a team like Reading? I actually kind of think that you do, because if you can succeed at Reading and if you have this on your CV, then that is a massive bonus for any club that's going to want to sign you. And let's face it, we can't really stop them from being signed by other clubs anyway. So I do think that just as a career move for a lot of these players, it's been a massive bonus for them. And we have to make the best of it. And so long as we can plan around it and make it all work, then hopefully it'll all click together.
Yeah, Ollie, what's it been like for you trying to explain to people that aren't Reading fans what the problem is at Reading? Because I have this weird situation where someone says, oh, what's gone wrong at Reading? I'm like, well, it started because we spent too much money. Now we don't have any money. And it's, you know, what has it been like for you, you know, when someone comes up and says, oh, what is going on at Reading?
Yeah, it's impossible to know where to start, really, isn't it? Like, it's like you almost go into the office every week and there's a new points deduction you've got to explain to somebody about why, and each time there's a different reason as to why points have been taken off. It is difficult because it goes back so many years. You know, you could almost pinpoint, you know, when Sir John Medeski sold the club as to really kind of when everything kind of really started. And it's been so many ups and downs in that kind of last decade period. You know, we were two penalties away from getting into the Premier League, which was like an absolute million miles away now. You know, but the last 5 years have just kind of, it has been tough. I think generally kind of when, before kind of all this have happened, when you told people you were kind of a Reading fan, there was kind of no real reaction. They were kind of like, oh yeah, well, okay, yeah. and now when you say you're a Reading fan, they're like, oh my God, what a last few years it's been. I think we have gained a bit of sympathy probably from people over the last few years, and kind of, I think because Reading
was... Portsmouth fans.
Yeah. No, they don't like us much for some reason.
I think because Reading kind of was historically was kind of this, particularly under Medeski, was, you know, this massively stable football club and was almost kind of the model club, particularly going up in the way we did in 2006. It was always kind of seen as this model club where, you know, that was run perfectly and that was kind of the example for us to follow. And now the fact that this has happened to us, it's kind of like, well, if it can happen to Reading, it can happen to anybody. I think it's kind of maybe made people aware that, you know, all it takes is kind of one dodgy owner and things can suddenly go rapidly downhill.
Yeah, Johnny, for me, I've felt a little bit humbled myself, because through years past, and when we were running TTE and doing the pod and stuff, you'd see financial clubs in financial crises going, and you had sympathy, but you always had that kind of, oh, it could never happen to us. And now you just, that vulnerability is now there. You realise that, yeah, it can literally happen to anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, like I said earlier, it's until you're faced with that moment of, you know, complete threat, that's the only time really when you think, oh, wow, this is actually happening to us. And so, as I say, like, you know, all we've got to hope is that ultimately, you know, we can find this new owner and just, you know, keep things on a level. I think, you know, after the last 4 or 5 years of sort of terminal decline, as I've sort of termed it, where we've just been escaping and then finally relegated last year, and, you know, things were looking as if we were down and out sort of, you know, say October, November time. I think we would just cry out for a little bit of stability. And so Yeah, a couple of seasons in League One, wouldn't mind it. There would be a few more away days.
I mean, look,
a few more new grounds to try out.
Knowing our luck, we'll get bought out by the guy who put on the Wonka experience. So, which would just be fitted. So look,
we can have an AI football team. That's fine. We'll just make all the players will be AI, and then we'll just look at it and say, oh yeah, they're great. Don't ask any more questions. They look good. That's it.
You know, it'd just be like, you know, if you've ever played like village cricket or like Sunday league football, isn't it? You just send off the result to the league, don't you? We could just start doing that. We just, yeah, we won 3-0 today. Oh, it was played behind closed doors, honest. Let's end the show then with a little stroll down memory lane with the five of you and myself as well. I mean, Westy, you started this whole podcasting thing. I mean, do you miss it? Do you miss having the chance to sort of get involved and sort of chew the fat over the game every week to sort of an audience, or are you glad you had your time and you're happy in that retirement?
I look at myself compared to you boys as the man who got them in the league, you know what I mean? And you boys have got on for me. So it's nice that the legacy continues. And again, I always want it to be, and I said this to you when you was on it, Dan, and when I've been with Mark and sort of been the pundit, I've always wanted it to be a sort of a kind of fun thing where it was like lads around the pub chatting about their football team, and I'm glad to see that legacy's continued. So it's been great, and I know Paul thinks the same. Paul lives in Germany now, but he is very active on Twitter, and he does see Reading every single week from the lofty perch of his living room. So it's been good that it's carried on, and I'm glad you guys have took it all on for us. And it's grown, isn't it? Obviously, it's not just the only podcast in town nowadays. And if it brings everyone together and, like I say, gives the fans a forum to speak their mind, then that's what it should be all about. I kind of like it to be more loose, not so tactical. I think let the managers talk about tactics, and there's just be sort of fans that talk our piece, and sometimes it doesn't make any sense, but at least you get it out there, you know? So, yeah, it's been great. Like I said, we started in 2008, and we were talking off air about it being the first game was against Southampton, and Handbags rightly corrected me that we got beat 2-1. I thought it was 2-0, but... and I think I called the first show Laurie McMenemy stole my seat. So it's been great. It's been great. And I say you guys have done an excellent job of taking it on and moving it a bit further on from me and my microphone strapped to a broom sat next to my tumble dryer. So, yeah. But it's been good and it's been recognised. And I think you look all over the fan world now and everyone's doing it, aren't they? So it was nice to be sort of one of the first. But it was never all about me. It was always about what the fans wanted and putting my opinions and the opinions of the fans out there and talking to the players as well and getting them on board. We've done some good interviews with Dylan Kerr and Trevor Senior and going back further. Dylan Kerr, one of my favourites, is brilliant. He was in South Africa at the time when we interviewed him and he was talking about punching Yamal B in the face, and that is what it was all about. That embodied so, fan the cast was all about. Yeah, it was good.
It's all about random player on player violence.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you should have come around 15 years later. I would have loved you to be doing like Reading fan TV, like the old Arsenal fan TV stuff.
That'd have been cool, wouldn't it? They got in the first for that one. But yeah, it's been good. It's been good. And like, what I used to do, you guys probably don't remember it, but when I used to have the former coach driver on, he used to tell us stories about what used to go on the coaches and what went on the hotels and stuff. And again, just an insight into stuff that we don't know, and probably it's been pushed to one side nowadays where we don't get that sort of information as much as we used to. So it's a little bit more involved as a sort of one-to-one thing, but it's been great and it's great that you guys have carried on. So thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot more kind of media awareness and literacy even from the early days of, you know, starting fan sites and podcasts and stuff like that. I mean, Johnny, I said you were here with me for the very first one in my living room in a house 11 years ago now. I mean, do you miss that sort of minutia, getting knee deep in to all the kind of tactics, the analysis and bits and pieces like that? Or again, is it nice just to be able to sit back and, you know, I listen to the stuff that Ross and Ben do, and their level of analysis is like so far beyond the half an hour prep that I would do sat there on my laptop before you and Westy knocked on my door.
Yeah, no, I do miss it. But as I said, like the stuff that's being done by those guys and by, you know, plenty of other Reading pods and just generally, you know, football media these days is absolutely incredible. And I think, you know, the accessibility of, you know, more tactical information and then also, you know, more data and all these sorts of things has just made it, you know, I know that Westy will say, keep that to the managers and keep that to the football analysts and keep the opinions and the hot takes to the podcast. But I think, there is such an availability of the media now that, everyone's raising each other's games, and it's really, really encouraging to see. And also, as we bring it back to the Sell Before We Die and the protests that are going on at the moment, again, the Reading fan base really being galvanized on social media to support these and to support the club and all coming together and hashtags and what have you, I think is really encouraging. And has been really, really great to see over the last few years. I really do, just being on this podcast, I really, really do miss chatting about the Reading games day in, week in, week out, and reminiscing about players and the podcasts that we've done in hotel rooms and all these places, emergency pods. It's been an adventure. But
I missed the pub one. I love the pub one from Christmas. That used to be brilliant. Someone always used to get sacked around that time as well for some unbeknown reason, whether it be who got sacked? McDermott got sacked.
Rogers.
Yeah, Rogers got sacked. Yeah. So always used to give us plenty of content, which was Andy. I just like the background noise, the sort of, you're in it.
I loved it, except to edit it. It was just like, Jesus, like, it's just probably even gonna... Nowadays, if I tried to put up one of those shows, I'd be getting like Universal Music or somebody like knocking on my door saying, we had a bit of background music from Take That or whatever. Can you please take that down? Ollie, you were in that emergency pod, weren't you? You with as well. We did that. We did the pre-playoff final show and in the actual Medeski itself. And it was nice to kind of have that kind of, I don't want to say legitimacy, but it was nice to kind of be embraced in that way and get to sort of speak to so many people.
Yeah, it was really cool, wasn't it? We're obviously all massive Reading fans, so to be able to record a podcast in Medeski Stadium was, kind of like a dream come true, wasn't it? I think we did, was it the 100th one we did in one of the boxes as well,
yes.
At the stadium as well? I think that was like the first time I'd ever been up kind of to that level in the football stadium. So, yeah, it was kind of like a whirlwind and, being able to speak to, childhood heroes of mine, interviewing Adam Lafondre, Joby McEnough, just kind of being able to speak to players who've grown up watching was just like a real, real kind of honour and, the platform that, TT has given, so many people, myself included, the number of kind of jobs that people have kind of got, gone on to and, it's all kind of started from people, just being fans and just talking about, our kind of one shared passion. And it's gone on, I'm sure, so many CVs and, I'm sure if you kind of put a list together of all the kind of organizations and publications that people have, written for TTE and podcasted for TTE have kind of gone on to work for, it's it makes you feel really proud, to be honest, because there's been some fantastic people who've kind of written for the site. I think we reminded a couple of weeks ago that James Earnshaw, now the Reading Chronicles Reading reporter, started out at TTE. What a journey that is. So, it's been kind of a privilege to be a part of, and I look back on kind of my time doing it with real, real fondness.
Yeah, Westy recording early pods with Johnny Fordham, who's now head of comms for Premiership Rugby. I doing the pod extra with Charles Watts, who's now best selling author and Mikel Arteta's best mate. So it's a platform for the stars, Dave. I mean, Dave, you've kind of been off and on shows and stuff over the years. I mean, what kind of where do you kind of see pods in the future? What are you missing?
I suppose, from my perspective, I kind of just miss that regularity, really, of knowing that I'm going to be there's going to be a game, I'm going to be there, and I'm going to be then talking about it a day or two later. It might just be, a fairly routine match, but then, just after I started sort of taking part in the podcast, we ended up in an FA Cup semi-final. Sort of talking about a trip to Wembley in the FA Cup was
don't know what you're talking about, Dave.
No, you wouldn't, would you? Getting married on the same day.
Don't know what you're talking about.
I'm the sort of person that would just quite happily sit there and chew the fat with people over football for for 2 to 3 hours whatsoever. And that was kind of the premise of my short-lived podcast, which I, you know, kind of want to get going again. But was just basically talking to people about their support for their club. And that's basically what I wanted to get and do from, you know, from the very start. And that's essentially what I've done ever since. It's been absolutely great to get involved, you know, to actually be in, from kind of asking the question, do you think I might be able to actually, you know, record a session and then end up, you know, doing sessions, you know, doing podcasts for the next 7 or 8 years, you know, or however many years it was, nine years actually. So yeah, it's been absolutely, you know, it's wonderful. Not great seasons, it's got to be said, other than 16-17. But, you know, sit there and talk about Reading nil, Ipswich 4 and absolutely lambast the players, or, you know, it's been from the sublime to the ridiculous, with more sublime than ridiculous while I've been doing it. So it was, yeah, it's been good. It's been good.
Do you know what I always would have wished, what we would have done, we should have done, is when we had them games, I always wish I would record it straight after the match when I was uncontrollably in a rage, yeah? Rather than Monday, when I've had a chance to have a good think about it. Do you know what I mean? Actually, maybe. That's what I wanted, that fan who comes off the watching the game and then thinks, right, now we're going to talk about it. Whether it can be complete nonsense, but much more listenable, I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm always in awe of how Ben manages to get those videos out straight after the game, his reactions, how he usually manages to stay so calm. I mean, it's a great talent, and it's why, you know, the Taliesin podcast is in such a great pair of hands, because he's got that ability to measure himself. It's one of the hardest things I always found, Westy, being a host, is trying to keep it. You know, we always tried to do it fairly family friendly as well. When you actually... yeah, and you just wanted to... And you and I both know some of the stuff that hit the cutting room floor. Because, you know, we value our freedom and our banks not getting raided for libel and defamation and all sorts of fun stuff like that. Mark, you know, you've been retired for 7 months. Do you ever see yourself making that comeback, or, you know, was there anything you kind of wish you'd been able to do?
You know what? I always thought, when we get to the Premier League, match of the day, we'll need a Reading fan or what have you, and they'll come knocking at the door and I'll be straight onto the studio being interviewed and getting paid £1 million and all that. I presume that's what happens when you do that. And I think as I took over in the season after we got to the playoff final, that dream just drifted and drifted away. And
it gave you a hospital pass there, sorry, mate.
Yeah, unfortunately, the promised land is still very much... In fact, it's further away than it's ever been, I guess you could say. So, that would have been nice. But, I was actually just thinking, just while you guys were talking, of, like, the great things that I was able to do. And that's kind of, you know, the great stuff that I look back on, interviewing the Amazons before they were quite as famous as they are now. That was great fun. I remember having a couple of times with Jose Gomez. Actually, one of those was fully behind closed doors before he did one of his star talks as well, just having 10 minutes to chew the fat with the new Reading manager was pretty fun. And then you've got random players like Kasper Gorks as well, who were, you know, just being able to email guys and just say, you know, do you fancy having an hour chat and stuff, and meeting people like Kevin Doyle and stuff in person was super nice. And Parky as well was a good one. I remember... I did a Reading FC women's special a few years ago, when the guy who set me up with it didn't tell me where they trained. So I just rocked up at Hogwood as it was then, thinking that that's where the women trained. And they were like, no, they don't train. I was like, well, where do I go then? They said, oh, this random, effectively like a school field, the other side of Reading. I was like, right, fair enough. So I ended up interviewing Farrah Williams, who was probably like one of the more legendary England players of all time, sat on effectively like a bench in a pitch next to a completely random game of football going on. Absolutely nothing to do with Reading. We'd just rented this field apparently for training. So yeah, you end up in some, if you throw yourself into it, I think that's the great thing about podcasts. If you throw yourself into it, you end up in some pretty great and some pretty wacky scenarios. And I was really pleased that I was able to go out, having done Brian McDermott and Jem Carachan together in a podcast. That was super nice. I mean, actually, So I got Ryan's phone number from the former Players Association just before Christmas, and I WhatsApped him saying, Ryan, do you fancy doing a podcast? I mean, he's had a lot of this. That period was when it was really coming out that, you know, he'd been suffering from alcoholism and struggling with his mental health, and he'd been doing a lot of stuff. So he rang me up, and I was sat in my mum's living room, having like a 10-minute phone conversation with Brian McDermott, that just to catch up with. I've never met him, never spoken to him, but yeah, he's just honestly like the nicest bloke to talk to, and all that sort of stuff. And it was just, we obviously organised the podcast, did it with Karajan as a way of making it a bit more interesting for him and for hopefully the listeners as well. And yeah, that sort of stuff was really good fun. And that's what you get in return for, you know, not getting paid basically, and for it being a hobby. And I mean, do I miss it? I'm in no shortage of, as my partner will attest, my Reading FC opinions get thrown at people who probably don't want them or don't ask for them. And I get to speak to, I've got a fair few fans who are fans of, or fair few friends rather, who are fans of, you know, smaller teams in the leagues and who kind of get it a bit more than your Arsenal and Chelsea fans. So yeah, it's a great experience. I know that actually Tyler Sten put up a thing for video and writer, producers and all sorts in the last couple of days before this podcast. As always, as someone who's also managed to forge a minor career in the sports media, I'd always just massively encourage people to get involved, particularly if you're just starting out, because you'll be around some of the best people and certainly from a Reading perspective, you'll have your name up in the biggest lights that you can probably really get it onto from that stage of your career. So I'd always massively encourage people to get involved. And Dan, you've been asking all the questions tonight, so I'll ask one of you. What was your favourite moment of being the podcast host for all those years?
I think just carrying on. I was, as soon as I listened to Westy and Paul do the fan cast, I was like, I'd love to do that. It's what I think deep down is what I've always wanted to do going through a career in the media, is I'd love to be paid to talk about Reading. If I can't get paid to talk about Reading, at least have a platform to, you know, entertain people and get guests on, like you said, to interview. And just what I really hope going forward for Ross and Ben, not that they don't do the best job possible, but I just want them to be able to get to a position with this football club, like we've all been talking about, where you can go back to just having just random banter and stuff about how Robson Kanu or John Swift and just nonsense stuff like that that we used to like talk about, and when you're talking about random shirt sponsors and stuff like that, and that's, it's so hard to do it when your club is literally threatened with going out of existence. And I just love listening to it when, you know, and there have been some good times this year, and I really hope that sort of going forward, that's what we can kind of get back to on the Tyler Sten podcast and the Tyler Sten website as well. Can't forget the incredible work that Sim does keeping all that going as well. And it's a thankless task. I mean, you look at how many, I always used to think, well, how did something like The Whiff, I used to read like The Whiff, it was the old fanzine, for those of you who don't remember, I think it petered out around, can't even remember when it finished, about 2010 maybe, eventually, just as we were starting actually on Tyler Sten. And I was thinking, oh, how could something like that die? People read it, people loved it. And you just need to remember like the amount of work that goes into all of these things. Like, for us here, I mean, technology's made it so much easier now, but even as Westy was saying, having to physically set up the equipment, as I did in my house as well, going through all that jazz, arranging guests, sorting scripts, writing articles, doing research, emailing fans to get opposition views and stuff like that. Such a lot of work goes into it. And it's when you get those thanks, you get the likes on Twitter, the retweets and people, the odd person, you know, I'm not saying loads of people are coming up to me, but the odd person saying, oh, you know, if I said, oh, I did the Tyler Sten, they're like, oh, thanks, I really enjoy. Even like now, I'll bump, like, there's a couple of people like randomly, like my daughter goes to school with, one of the parents was like, oh, I realized reading the Tyler Sten, you're that Dan from that used to do that. And it's just little things like that that I've absolutely loved. Coming back and doing the podcast extra this year has been great as well, with James and Jimin and Andy. I wish I could do it more. I full transparency, I pitched this as a grumpy old man podcast way back in the summer when I was going to dip my toe back in. I messaged Dave, I messaged Westy and was like, I kind of got this idea going, but And that's the biggest problem with getting older, is that, or in different stages of your life, is that you just don't have the time sometimes, Westy, isn't it?
No, it's definitely, there's a lot of work goes into it. People don't realise, and they say technology has made that a lot easier, because I had AD Williams come to my house and be interviewed. He's literally sat in my dining room and we interviewed him there. So it's a lot different to it is now. But as you was talking, I was remembering stuff that we did. I mean, when we started with Football Fancast back in 2008, we got some Heineken sponsorship. They sponsored us. There was going to be £25 a show, believe it or not, big money, eh? But on the first episode, we mentioned drink driving and they pulled the sponsorship the same day. So that didn't happen, yeah? We started an argument with the Pigeon Detectives, if anyone remembers them as a group, where their management team sent us a rather snotty email saying, why did we slag off their album on our podcast? I'd done an interview for Danish television outside Madasi Stadium with a Reading shirt on in the snow, just to make it authentic. We had the Hal Robson Canoe Award for the worst player of the season. We used to do that every year. I've done a song with Daniel Johnson at Madasi Stadium. If anyone remembers Daniel Johnson off the
yes.
Yeah, we done this song. It was awful. And he was going to sing it in front of the Reading and West Ham fans. And I was so keen for him to do it. But it never happened, unfortunately. My dad appeared on Fox News USA, America. He thought it was a wind-up. He got a phone call from this American guy saying, can we interview you? He'd listened to one of my podcasts and wanted my dad's story about the day he got married. He thought it was one of his mates winding him up. So I sat there waiting eagerly. 15 minutes goes past. He started thinking, oh, this isn't going to happen. And then this massive news truck pulled outside my mum and dad's house down Corwin Road. And all these people got off of equipment, coming to my dad's living room, done makeup and lighting, and then interviewed him and then disappeared. Never see the footage because it was in America, but it happened.
Anything else anybody else wants to add before we go back to the retirement home?
One thing, if I can just throw in as well, just as a, and not, this isn't a massively positive thing to say, but from the experience, just to kind of peel back the curtain a little bit for people as well, as to all the stuff that Westy said, what we were allowed to publish of that, and the stuff that I was saying as well. So much of this depends on people actually kind of responding to emails and saying, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I mean, 90% of those emails probably end up going to the club. And I can probably count on one hand how many of my ideas actually got allowed to happen and stuff. And not that the club has to say yes to everything. I'm pretty sure that the media department of the club now could fit in like my boot. Like, there's just not many people who do in charge of this anymore. And obviously there's an absent owner as well. So what Reading fans really need, and what the podcast, whether it's Tyler Stend or anyone else, really needs, is a club that is open to doing things with them and actually saying, you know what, here's an open door. Go and talk to the manager. Go and film a little bit of the training ground. Even, you know, kind of wacky soccer AM things. Let's get Ben, probably not whilst he lives in America, but let's get Ben in training for like a morning session and stuff like that. These are the kind of great bits of content that fans would love. And the Tyler Stend is a brilliant platform and vehicle for, but over the, certainly in my time doing it, it just wasn't open. It just was not a possibility for a lot of the time. We got far too many kind of no's or just ignored emails and stuff. And that's kind of, I guess it'll be a new era of Reading at some point in the next few months or whatever. And that's my kind of hope for the new era, is that they've seen the success of Things I Sell Before We Die and stuff. And that they open the doors and say, you know what, we're not quite as worried about you being a bit foolish or a bit silly. Let's just do something that's a bit more fun and a bit more open with the fans.
Excellent. Anybody else?
See, I never cared. I never wanted to be on the veil. I always wanted to be an annoying little brother. And I think I'd done that pretty well. So I think once you start taking their coin and getting involved with them, then you're asking for trouble, because then you've got to bring in your content. So I never wanted that. I always wanted to be on the outskirts being annoying rather than on the inside being told what to do, if I'm being honest.
John Barnes at the Football Blogging Awards doing Rapper's Delight. That was a highlight.
Just things to see. While we were at Hotel Football as well, next to Old Trafford, just bizarre. But look, I'm going to bring an end to proceedings there, because I'm sure we've driven off. We've got so many unsubscribes off the back of us old gits moaning. But look, it's been a genuine pleasure. I'm hoping that this will be something semi-regular. I do have this kind of idea that a kind of a bit more like what Westy said, a bit more of a pub chatty every sort of couple of months, gathering, sort of have a view of what's going on the pitch and sort of an alternative as well to what we do here week in, week out with Ross and Ben. But as always, life gets in the way. So I will promise lots and then underdeliver, which is the general motto of my career as the Talisman podcast host and editor of the website. Had lots of big ideas. Some of them we did. To this day, I can't believe there was ever a point in my life where I was editing a website, putting out two podcasts a week, doing video shows as well after games, was in a relationship with somebody, and also had a full-time job. I physically don't know where the time went. Nowadays, I have two girls, and I basically struggle to carve out an hour to play FIFA. So life changes. But look, thank you to each of the five of you, not just for tonight, but for everything you've done. Again, I speak totally unbiased. I've admired each and every one of you for various points for what you've done, for not just TTE, but just being a Reading fan in general. I said from Westy putting out shows I was listening to on my commutes, Mark keeping us going through the pandemic, Johnny for me palming off any bad article that I didn't really want to edit, and Johnny would do the honors for me, and for obviously all the Gamble Aware references, Ollie as well for taking on Podcast Extra and again being part of the editorial crew back in the day, and Dave for any time I've had any kind of question about Reading history or any time I needed a guest, Dave was happy to pop around my house or clarify bits and pieces for me, and of course for the work you're doing now with Sell Before We Die as well. It's people like you literally trying to keep the club alive, so we owe massive thanks to yourselves and all the volunteers there. We're gonna go, don't really have a sign off or anything like that on this show, but I suppose the only one to do is come on, you ours.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.